The Capital Ideas podcast now has a new monthly edition hosted by Capital Group CEO Mike Gitlin. Investment professionals reveal their best mentors, how they find their next great idea, and a few funny stories. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. American Funds Distributors, Inc.
From the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
What have we learned from reading Dr. Anthony Fauci's emails? And what does another meager jobs report say about the economic recovery? Welcome, I'm Kyle Peterson with the Wall Street Journal. We're joined today by my colleagues, WSJ columnists Kim Strassel and Bill McGurn. Dr. Anthony Fauci, his day job is director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases. But he's been a very public face of the federal government's COVID-19 response. And this week, reporters got their hands on thousands of pages of his emails from January 2020 to about June 2020. He seems to have replied to an impressive number of random people who wrote him just asking for some advice about whether to fly or where to take a mask. There are some interesting notes about him reacting to becoming a celebrity whose face was showing up on novelty socks and donuts and stuff like that. But Kim, were there some deeper revelations here that are worth taking note of?
Yeah, and you're right. I was kind of struck by the adulatory tone in most of the articles about this, really sort of talking about how diligent he was as a public servant and answering all these emails, et cetera. But to me, what was most interesting, and we had an editorial on this today, is what he said in some of these emails or indicated in some of these emails about this question of COVID-19's origin and the growing concern that it came from a lab like the Wuhan Institute of Virology. And early on in public conversation, Dr. Fauci publicly ruled this out several times, said it, you know, it definitely just has a natural origin. It was not created in a lab. And he just even publicly said last month that he's changed, that it's possible now that more people are looking at it. But if you look at the emails, which were released way back in early 2020, I think in February 2020, he got an email from an immunologist named Christian Anderson that wrote that there were some worries that the virus had some unusual features. And Dr. Fauci ended up sending this to his deputy assistant, Hugh Achincloss, a paper about this gain of function research. And he said, read this. You're going to have things that have to be done today. There was clearly some concern in his head, even all the way back then, that this might not have had a natural origin. And, you know, there's some other stuff in there, too, about this is interesting because it is Dr. Fauci's National Institutes of Health that sent some money to a nonprofit that ended up giving money to WIV for some of this gain of function research.
Well, I agree with Kim here that that was the email that piqued my interest the most. I'll just read part of it. He says to his deputy, this is Fauci writing, it is essential that we speak this AM. Keep your cell phone on. Read this paper as well as the email that I will forward to you now. You will have tasks today that must be done, unquote. The deputy writes back, the paper you sent me said the experiments were performed before the gain of function pause. And then he promises to, quote, try to determine if we have any distant ties to this work abroad, unquote. And at the very least, Bill, I would be interested to know more about what they were looking into, what he was thinking when he sent that email. And it seems to me that the next time there have been some attempts to push Dr. Fauci on this when he's testified before Congress. But this at least gives some specific details that one of the congressmen can grab onto when he's pushing that line of inquiry, Bill.
Yes, absolutely. What struck me, if you step back from the individual contentions and so forth about what this email shows or that email shows, there is an incredible naivete in Dr. Fauci's statements about the Chinese. You know, I don't blame people for not necessarily knowing that they're being deceived, but you know, he's these emails make Rand Paul look a lot better than Dr. Fauci. And one of the things he says repeatedly in defending these emails is we can trust the Chinese scientists because we have a relation with them. And I think that is that's an incredible statement for this, especially in China. As you know, China makes no distinction between its private sector and its public sector. If you're in any business in China or any enterprise, whether you're a university, a lab, whatever it is, a private business, you're expected to support the military and intelligence ambitions of the government. If they need you, they'll do it. Why would we think that a government that is committing genocide in with the Uyghurs is going to draw strict lines about science and spending decisions? You know, I don't believe Dr. Fauci knowingly funded bad things and so forth, thinking the Chinese might abuse them. But I think his naivete for someone that high up, you know, using taxpayer dollars is just really extraordinary.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. On the question of the lab leak hypothesis for COVID's origin versus the natural hypothesis, both of which seem still to me to be in the running, it does seem, though, looking at these emails, that Fauci was consistent in suggesting a natural origin from the beginning. And there's an email, I think he was a recipient of this one. It appears to be a link about people talking about a lab leak hypothesis. And most of the text of the email is blocked out. And so we can't really see what the text is, but the headline or the subject line is "Conspiracy Gains Momentum." That was an email from April. And it seems to me that there are all sorts of examples pretty regularly of viruses traveling from animals to humans. You think about bird flu, you think about swine flu. And so from an Occam's razor standpoint, I can see how Fauci in April or February of 2020, right when the pandemic was starting to take hold in the US, might have thought, Kim, you know, give scientists a few months and we'll probably find the species that it traveled through, and that will be the end of the story.
Sure. And I think that's a completely reasonable position to have had, as you said, at the beginning of this. There were a lot of things we didn't know. What I think has become harder to justify is his unwillingness to even entertain that possibility, to so vehemently reject it, even as we've gone along. And there's been a lot of things that show that this does not look natural. Not only is there very little evidence to support the theory that the virus emerged from nature, there are a lot of things that now have been flagged that suggest it did not. You know, one example, for instance, is, you know, most of the time when you have these coronaviruses, they don't jump directly from bats to humans. They usually need an intermediate host. For months and months now, people have been looking for that intermediate host. And, you know, if you go back and look, for instance, at the SARS epidemic, we found out right away that the virus mutated and jumped to civets, which are cats bred for consumption. And we were able to trace that link and figure out how this connection been made. We still have not found an intermediate host here, despite a really exhaustive effort to find one. And then there are some other really odd things about mutations that are in this particular coronavirus that make it look as though it was maybe designed to invade human cells. People have been talking about this thing called a furin cleavage site on the spike protein. This is the only SARS coronavirus that has a site like this. And it's possible it could have picked it up naturally, but it seems unlikely. And we do know of a number of gain of function experiments that specifically added a furin site to make a virus more infective. So there's been a lot of stuff out there that certainly casts a lot of suspicion on the lab theory. And we don't know for sure, but just the fact that he wouldn't entertain it for so long, and the fact that there are some potentially uncomfortable ties between this funding from the U.S. government through this nonprofit to this lab, I think just cast some question on Fauci and his credibility on this question.
Hang tight. We'll be right back. You're listening to Potomac Watch from the Wall Street Journal.
This episode is brought to you by Charles Schwab. Decisions made in Washington can affect your portfolio every day. But what policy changes should investors be watching? Washington Wise is an original podcast for investors from Charles Schwab that unpacks the stories making news in Washington and how they may affect your finances and portfolio. Listen at schwab.com/WashingtonWise.
From the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
Welcome back. Just to draw out the analogy to SARS a little bit more, because I think that's an interesting one. SARS, the initial SARS virus emerged in November of 2002. And it was about 6 months later that the headlines, I'll read one from the New York Times story, May 2003, strain of SARS is found in 3 animal species in Asia. The story says it's a virtually identical virus that has been isolated in a tree-dwelling animal whose meat is a delicacy in southern China. So that bill sort of explained the route that virus took to humans. And the question, and this is what I think has made the lab leak hypothesis more credible in a lot of people's minds, is that no one has found anything like that. And there are reports that something like 50,000 animal samples have been tested. And Bill, it seems to me that it would be very much in the Chinese government's interest to find and explain that natural link if it were there to be found.
Yes, if it's there. Look, I said there's sort of 3 points on this. First, as you mentioned, Occam's razor. Occam's razor is basically that simplest explanations do unless there's compelling evidence to go for something more complex. And I don't know what caused the transmission of COVID, but I think if you're looking for a coronavirus in bats, and then you find out that there's a virology lab just a few miles away, I think that the logical approach would be you investigate it until you rule it out. I mean, that's what we do in police investigations all the time. You have suspects who are suspects for different reasons, maybe circumstantial, and then they're ruled out. But this is what I blame them for. I don't blame them for not knowing. I blame them for suggesting that anyone that brings up, which is a logical suspicious place, was treated as indulging in a conspiracy theory. And I think that's marred their credibility. I think that comes through some of Dr. Fauci's emails. You know, it wasn't that they said, well, we don't know, and we're a little modest, and we're still investigating. It said, this is it. It mirrored the WHO, which did this whole investigation, 300 something pages, only 4 to the possibility of the lab. As you point out, since then, the evidence, you know, has not supported the natural development theory, because we haven't found this in other animals. And I agree with you that if China were really, it really is telling the truth about the origins, then they would have everything to gain by being transparent. They're clearly not transparent. They're putting out kook theories of their own, such as that it originated in the U.S. lab. So that doesn't, I don't think that inclines to build trust in their relationship. And again, I go back to the biggest thing. You know, Dr. Fauci had a tough job. He's on the spot on this. We don't know. There's an awful lot we don't know. Remember at the beginning, you know, all the things we were supposed to do, wipe down surfaces. You know, there were shortages of Clorox wipes because all the surfaces were wiping down. Then it turns out, you know, we're not really in danger of getting it from a surface. Again, that's understandable when you don't know. The same thing, you mentioned SARS. I remember when HIV AIDS developed and people thought you could catch it so easily, and some people were shunned and so forth. Again, in the beginning, I think that could be an understandable thing. But their approach was not to say, let's investigate and follow the evidence. Their approach was to say, we're not even going to consider these other explanations. And I think there's a lot of embarrassment that's going to be happening. We're probably never going to find patient zero now. I'm sure if it did develop in the lab, I think the Chinese have been using this time to destroy whatever evidence there is. But I think from other traces, you know, we're hearing traces of some people say there are markers that indicate it did develop in a lab. And some even say there are markers that indicate they tried to hide this. We're not going to have a conclusive answer, but I think we will have a preponderance of truth, you know, in a couple of months, which again points to a dilemma Joe Biden has. What happens after this investigation is over? And I presume there'll be slightly more evidence because it seems to be concluding. What is he going to do? Is he going to take China on? I don't know. It just seems he's postponing, a reckoning on this subject.
One last thought here on Fauci, and it's the question of his credibility, Kim, which you raised. And I also think this is the problem with doing strategic deception, which he has done a couple times at least over the past year and a half. I mean, first he said that the public shouldn't go out and buy masks, and then he explained that he was trying to get people to leave them on the shelf for hospital workers. Then he later admitted to moving up his goalpost on the percentage of Americans that need to be vaccinated to reach herd immunity. And that the problem is, if you engage in strategic deception like that, Kim, now there are people looking through his emails, and a natural question is to wonder what kind of angle he might be working in some of these.
Yeah, and the one that really sticks out for me is that first one you just mentioned, because as we all remember, he initially said, you don't need to wear a mask, don't go get a mask. And when he later changed to his pro-mask position, he consistently maintained that he'd never advised the public that masks couldn't help them, just that they shouldn't buy them. That, you know, he had said that because he was trying to save PPE for frontline workers and there was a mask shortage. And that was the only reason he said he went over and over. He said it wasn't that masks didn't work. It's just that you shouldn't buy them at a moment. And that's simply not true. And, you know, we have an email in this dump from February 5th in 2020, in which Fauci sends an email to a colleague and advises against her wearing a mask. And he says, points out that the kind of mask you buy in a drugstore, quote, is not really effective in keeping out virus, which is small enough to pass through the material, end quote. So his original judgment and the reason he said don't wear a mask is because that's what the science showed. And then somewhere along the line, some scientists suggested that this would help. And it became this, you know, symbol of whether or not you were helping with the virus effort. And he got on board. And even today, we don't have really any good scientific evidence that it really helps, especially with an aerosolized virus. But he kind of went along with that. And we can see here, as you said, that he was changing his position to make himself look better and try to justify some decisions that really couldn't be justified.
The other development on this front this week has been this Vanity Fair story, which is a long investigation into the lab leak hypothesis and really why it took the government so long to acknowledge it. And a few points I would draw out here. One is it cites a memo written by a former acting assistant secretary to the State Department, who wrote that his team was warned not to pursue an investigation of the origin of COVID-19 because it would, quote, open a can of worms if continued. There's also some quotes from Matthew Pottinger, the former deputy national security advisor, who says two interesting things that I found interesting, at least. One of them is that Pottinger sort of blames Trump for some of this, in that Trump was publicly saying that he had seen evidence that the virus came out of a lab before apparently, reportedly, that evidence was really there. And so Pottinger says that seemed to cause a quote, antibody response, unquote, within the government. And then the second thing is he says that so many of the experts in this field have ties of some kind to this gain of function research, that those conflicts, quote, played a profound role in muddying the waters and contaminating the shot at having an impartial inquiry, unquote. So, Bill, I mean, it seems to me that these are questions that maybe we need Congress and some sort of investigation to answer, because it seems like there are a lot of conflicts and a lot of reasons everybody was sort of hoping that the lab leak hypothesis wasn't what it would turn out to be.
Yeah, I think in the case of the Vanity Fair piece that you mentioned, I too found that really fascinating. There were not only people hoping that they wouldn't find things, but actively trying to shut down the investigation. I mean, one of the other stories is that, you know, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo was pushing this investigation, but he was fought by people in his own department about this. And they, some of them may have just believed this is a kooky theory. There's nothing there. But others, that line, I think it was in the Vanity Fair about, you know, if we have an investigation, it could open a can of worms, suggests that some people don't have good answers for what we might find out. I agree. I think this is something for Congress to look into. They'll probably wait until they get the latest report from Joe Biden. And I would add another thing to judge the credibility of this new investigation. Will the Biden team include members of the former team that was investigating? I mean, they've done some of the legwork already, or are they going to keep those people marginalized? It seems to me if you're really interested in getting the truth, you would take advantage of those people's expertise, what they found and what they didn't find. But I don't think that's going to happen.
Finally, Friday's jobs report looks only so-so. Employers added 559,000 workers in May, but that was a lower figure than expected. The unemployment rate fell from 6.1% to 5.8%. But Kim, at this stage in the economic recovery, businesses opening up, people starting to spend again, I mean, is this really the kind of boom that we should be having, or should it be a bigger boom than this?
Not at all. This is very disappointing. We should just be having an economy that is roaring back to life. And one of the problems here is that we are not picking up enough jobs to keep pace with the overall economy. And there doesn't seem to be any question that this has to do with the fact that the federal government and too many blue states continue to pay people to sit at home. There's a record level of job openings in the U.S., and it very clearly proves that businesses are having a really tough time filling positions, especially when you look at some of the areas in which it is. It is a lot of industries such as construction and services where they might not be as higher paying jobs. And right now, people are getting a better wage or something, at least enough to make them double think going back to work, to just not want to go out and get back in the labor market.
Two data points there that I think are interesting, and I'm taking these from the Journal's news story on this. The first is that wages are going up compared with a year ago. Hourly wages were up 2%, and in leisure and hospitality businesses, including restaurants, they were up 4%. So that's a reasonable wage gain, and yet the labor force participation rate, which is the percentage of adults who either have a job or are looking for a job, it dropped a little bit in May, and it is still more than a point, about a point and a half lower than it was in February, Bill. So, I mean, what do you make of that? Wages are going up, and people are not being drawn back into the workforce yet.
Yeah, I think this is very troubling. As you know, we've had sort of a long decline in the labor force participation rate. It peaked up a little bit under the Trump years. I think it went to like 63.3%, but that's lower than I think what it was in 2010. So it's been going down. And that to me is the more troubling rate than an unemployment rate. How many people are working are really working or looking for work. And I'm not sure this is going to get better under Joe Biden's economic plan with the taxes that he's going to impose and the spending that he's going to impose. I don't see those numbers recovering. And I think also, one of the fair things is it points to make is that it seems like this is going to be a repeat of the Obama years in terms of growth. The economy is ready to roar back now. There's nothing, there's really nothing holding back the economy. It was hit by a pandemic. But there's a lot of, pent up demand and so forth. But the Biden people are predicting that as a result of their policies, we're going to have something like 2% growth rate for the next few years. And that That's really measly. It doesn't sound like a big change, but if you can move 2% to 3%, which was the average, I think, for 1961 to 2000, it's a huge increase for workers. It means, you know, more money they get to keep. It's like having a raise every year. And I don't see this getting better. I think it's going to be very grim.
Thank you, Kim and Bill. Thank you all for listening. And we'll be back next week with another edition of Potomac Watch.
The Claude 3 model family by Anthropic is your one-stop shop for enterprise AI. Haiku is lightning fast and cost-effective. Sonnet strikes the perfect balance between skills and speed. And Opus sets new industry benchmarks for intelligence. Learn more at anthropic.com/Claude.